happiness or goodwill or kind of a maternal, I think maybe it'd be appropriate to call it kind of maternal feeling for yourself or for others. And the sutra on loving kindness, which I have copies, which I might have, there might be enough for everyone here, and you might want to take it home and read it. And some people actually get a lot of benefit from memorizing it. And you're sitting in the traffic lights or something, and you can just recite it, rather than having just whatever kind of random thoughts you have. And or it might, if you memorize it, sometimes it penetrates more deeply into you, and then just thinking about it, understanding it intellectually, and also it might float up into your consciousness at times that surprise you. It's like a resource that's available, and suddenly it comes up, and wow, that's what I need to hear, and so it's available. And in that sutra, it doesn't say it's loving kindness is a maternal feeling, but it does make the analogy with a mother watching over her child, willing to risk her own life to protect her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, suffusing the whole world with unobstructed loving kindness. So, so the point I wanted to make last week is that the maternal instinct, the maternal feeling, or a feeling of wanting to take care of oneself, or a feeling of care for oneself or for others, or wishing someone well, will arise naturally for anybody who does a mindfulness meditation, mindfulness practice. It's almost as if it's a nature of the heart, or nature of our inner self, to want to express or radiate loving kindness when the clouds, of delusion or whatever, are clear a little bit. And maybe she didn't get one. Oh, that's something else. Oh, did I pass out the wrong thing?
Yeah, there was just that one thing.
One of them, actually, that might be something different.
Oh, that was
You got one? No, I only have the original. I don't want to let go of that.
I'll make some more copies.
Yeah, we can bring some more next week and just pass them out. And so the loving kindness practice is the practice of not just leaving loving kindness to chance, that might let it just happen to happen when it comes naturally out of the practice or out of whatever conditions, but actually trying to cultivate it or reinforce it be actively involved in cherishing and nurturing and watering the seed of that intention. And it's the intention that's important, not so much the feeling. Even though we often talk about the feeling and extending the feeling, kind of the maternal sense or warmth or friendliness or whatever, but it's really the intention which is important for the practice. And what I like to say often is that historically, there was a tendency for Westerners who studied Buddhism to think that Buddhism was kind of an ascetic religion that had no feelings or emotions attached to it, and you became kind of world-renouncing and indifferent to the world. And you find some scholars, famous scholars in the 1800s, who wrote about Buddhism that way. But I always say it's a little bit different, that Buddhism it's not really a denial of anything. We're not trying to deny ourselves or deny our natural instincts and feelings for others, but what we're trying to do in a sense is to universalize them. So we take our natural ability and capacity to love ourselves, to be friendly towards ourselves, and also to love and feel friendship towards people around us, the family or friends or whoever it might be. And we celebrate that, we enjoy that, we allow that to be there, and we use that as a foundation, we strengthen that. And then from that we try to universalize those feelings so they're no longer just personal, just for oneself or just for one's personal acquaintances, until it becomes boundless, it becomes universal, it encompasses all living beings everywhere. And for a religion that stresses no self, it's also a religion that stresses very much the importance of feeling loving kindness for oneself, of feeling warmth and tenderness and care and nurturing and whatever, for one's own well-being also, and to appreciate oneself. And so the Buddha said that if you traveled throughout the world to find someone who is more worthy of loving kindness, you would find no one who is more worthy than yourself. And in the West, that seems a little odd, because we're not supposed to kind of praise ourselves so much in the West. It's kind of considered arrogant or whatever. And through our own eyes, in a sense, everyone is equally has a right to be happy. And if you're looking, the person who's most close at home is yourself, and you have just as much right as anyone else to receive, be the recipient of your own good wishes and happiness. However, loving kindness is not the state of loving kindness, even though in part it's an intention. In part it's a feeling, a sense. It's not something you can have an objective relationship to. It's not like you can. So, or at least it's difficult. It's something you have to find yourself in, rather than something you can have and then try to create from the outside. You have to kind of be in the middle. It's something that's very intimate into yourself. You can be in a state of love, but you can't be up here kind of and having love in your heart somehow and just thinking that you can manipulate or tinker with it. So there's a kind of softening and perhaps a kind of surrendering into maybe the heart or into the body. Because it's only in the body or in the heart, I think, that you really can open up to the possibility of love and friendship and care and compassion. And I say that, I think it's very important to say that, because we often, many of us think it's just intellectual exercise. And I think the real intimacy we can have with others really can only happen if you're embodied, if you're in your body. That needs to happen. So we drop down into our body, and the embodiment side of a mindfulness practice becomes very important for being able to discover what's in the body and discover the physical capacity to feel these wonderful feelings that come, that are there. So last week we did loving kindness towards ourself, and then today we'll do it towards friends, towards benefactors. Usually it's said when you move loving kindness from yourself to others, the first category traditionally is the benefactors. And the idea being that the benefactor is easy to feel loving kindness or friendship or to a benefactor, someone who's helped you out. And in the West, sometimes we say that, or sometimes we just say, you know, a friend or a good friend or someone you care for. Traditionally, it's said when you choose a friend or a benefactor, it should be someone of the same sex, because they're worried or concerned that if you choose someone of the opposite sex, that the at least for, I guess, heterosexuals, that you would confuse loving kindness with some other kind of more romantic feelings for someone. And in fact, it's very easy to confuse, I think, loving kindness with the kind of intimacy or warmth that can come with loving kindness. It's very easy to confuse it at times with romantic feelings. And there's a lot of people, you know, feel a little bit funny sometimes because they're not so sure where the boundaries are. So they say traditionally you shouldn't choose someone of the opposite sex. And in the West, we tend to ignore that instruction. Most people in the West are impatient with that kind of attitude. And most of us are adults, and, you know, and we're not going to get caught by that, we think. But as we do this, you might take that a little bit into account. And if you choose someone to do loving kindness towards, you should at least pay attention. You know, what happens if you do it towards someone who you feel some kind of romantic attraction to, was that really the right thing, or is that kind of funny? And maybe next time you should just avoid that and do it towards someone who's more romantically neutral, or whatever. That's for you to discover. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I just give you the traditional teaching, and you can struggle with it.
Why is it a struggle?
Why the struggle? I was being a little bit, a little bit glib here. But there is a traditional teaching of avoiding people of the opposite sex. And the struggle that I'm talking about is, what are you going to do with that traditional instruction? Are you going to accept it? And so completely avoid the opposite sex when you do loving kindness, which is what the tradition tells you to do. Or are you just going to forget about what the tradition says and just do whatever you want? or are you going to kind of pay attention to that and kind of use that to maybe discover something? That's what I meant. You can just, I just gave you the traditional teaching and you can do with it as you find fit. But what was your concern?
Well, I just wondered why that would exclude loving kindness, or why loving kindness would not be loving kindness if it was directed towards someone that you love in another way.
Yeah, it doesn't. It can very well be, and it's really wonderful to sit and have feelings of loving kindness or someone you feel deeply in love with and romantically engaged in, with. But I guess the danger is that it's possible that the loving kindness slides over to become a very different kind of attitude, and that different attitude it was traditionally considered to be somewhat problematic. So, for example, if lust arises, then well, lust is not loving kindness, and then you're sitting there, you know, dealing with your lust. You know, that's kind of what I think the ancient tradition. That's what they were concerned about, romantic love so much. You know, they maybe didn't even know what that was. But they were concerned about lust. What?
I said, and they didn't know what that was.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I don't know how to speak for other cultures. But there's these studies that say the romantic love arose in the West, and you know, with Dante and the troubadours at that time in 1300s or whatever. I mean, I don't know. I think everybody. I think it's human to feel love. But you know what happened there in the 1300s that defined the kind of love that is so pervasive in the West. I'm not sure. I haven't studied it. But if that's the case, if a lot of Western notions of romantic love are tied to the troubadour tradition in the 1300s, and India didn't have a troubadour tradition in the 1300s, then do they have a different understanding of what love is? And I don't know. It's always so challenging to study anthropology, because suddenly the categories you think are so sacred, and you know you die over your opinions about them. Suddenly, wait a minute, maybe they're just culturally conditioned products. So maybe that's enough for a kind of introduction. And so let's do a little bit. I'll do some guided loving kindness. And so when you do loving kindness meditation, you should it's more important in loving kindness to be comfortable in your meditation posture than it is for mindfulness practice. So do what you can to be comfortable, but to sit upright in an alert way. And if you need to change your posture as we go through this, you can do that. And close your eyes. And take a couple of deep breaths, using the exhalation to settle into your place, into your body. And then letting yourself breathe normally. Feel your body for a few moments, the body that happens to be alive at this moment, in whatever way it presents itself to you. Just become aware of how you are after maybe a busy or hectic day or whatever. Feeling your body from the inside, checking in with yourself as a way of changing gears from your ordinary day to being present. And then if it's simple to do, you can also relax some of your big muscles. You can relax and soften your stomach. Sometimes it's possible to soften slightly the chest. And also the shoulders. Especially sometimes it's possible to soften a little bit on the exhalation. Sometimes it can soften, relax the forehead and the eyes, the jaw. And then feel now your breath within your torso. The arising and passing of the breath, the expansion and contractions. And as you breathe out, very silently, just to yourself, ever so slightly, you can give a little sigh as a way of settling in, relaxing. As you breathe out, sigh. And then breathing normally again. Let your attention settle on the area around your heart, center of your chest. And simply feel what is there, without any notion of right or wrong. And if you don't feel much at all, that's fine. It's enough just to keep your attention, your awareness resting in that area. And then you can imagine, perhaps, that as you breathe in through the heart, through the chest. And perhaps you breathe in a feeling of warmth or loving kindness towards yourself, tenderness. Embracing the heart with the in-breath, with a feeling of goodwill. Maternal loving kindness. And that as you breathe out, you're breathing out calmness, peacefulness. And then continuing to breathe in and out through your heart, through the center of your chest. You can repeat these phrases quietly to yourself, the phrases of loving kindness, allowing the meaning or the intention behind the phrases. To resonate with your heart, with your body. So then silently to yourself you can repeat, may I be happy. May I be filled with joy. May I be free of whatever worry predominates in my life. May I be free of whatever anxiety troubles the mind and the heart. May this wonderful body of mine dwell at ease. May this body be filled with delight. May I be at peace. And getting a sense as you sit here of your aliveness in this body, the sense of being alive, the vitality of life that has to be present as we sit here. However vaguely you sense it, our aliveness, our vitality, is partly who we are, and it's something very precious. And feeling the preciousness of being alive, of being here, can you open yourself up to desire to take care of that aliveness, to take care of the spark of life that is you? May I be happy. May I be free from suffering. May I be free from mental harm. May I dwell in joy and delight. And then continuing to breathe in and out through the middle of your chest. Bring to mind some friend that you have. And bring to mind a memory of a time when this friend was with you. And this friend was very happy, full of delight, joy. Maybe you can remember what their face looked like, smiling, or their eyes sparkling, or perhaps you remember a particular event or a time you were together with this person, and how you shared in that delight, or in that happiness or joy. And then holding this memory or this image of your friend, see if you become aware somewhere within, even an inkling of it, a desire or intention that this person, this friend of yours, may they be well, may they be happy, may they be free from harm and danger. May they prosper. And if you can feel even a hint of that, a feeling of caring for that person, and even if you can't, then you can repeat these words, sinking into the meaning of the very phrases. May my friend be happy. May my friend be free from suffering. May my friend's life be filled with joy. May my friend be filled with delight. May my friend dwell in safety. May my friend be at peace. And then continuing to breathe in and out through the chest. Now bring to mind some child that you've met perhaps recently, who you took some delight in or you felt some care for. And sometimes it's easiest to have caring, loving, kind feelings for children, small children. We naturally want them to be well and happy. So bring to mind some child that you met recently or some time ago. loving kindness. May this child be happy. May this child live in safety. May this child be filled with joy. May this child be healthy. May this child be filled with delight and perhaps a little mischievousness. May this child be at peace. And then letting go of the memory or the image of the child. Now bring to mind someone who has been a benefactor for you. A mentor or a teacher, a sponsor, a supporter, a guide. See if you can bring to mind someone who has been a benefactor, who was a benefactor because they cared for you. They helped you out. May my benefactor be happy. May my benefactor be free from worry and stress. May my benefactor be filled with joy. May my benefactor live at ease. May my benefactor feel in his or her heart the gratitude or the appreciation I feel. And then we can continue for a little while in silence. And you can breathe in through your heart, breathe in loving kindness, breathe out calmness or peacefulness. And if you want, you can think of other people, other friends or benefactors, and quietly, in your own way, express whatever loving kindness you might feel for those people. And then again, having a felt sense within of your own aliveness, of your own inner presence or vitality. And maybe having a sense of this, allowing it to be held by your body, by your awareness. Perhaps appreciating your own aliveness. You can end this period of loving kindness by once again directing a little loving kindness to yourself, saying whatever phrases of loving kindness that seem appropriate. And then when I ring the bell in a few moments, you can take a few deep breaths again, using the in-breath to connect to your body, to the place, to the cushion. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So loving kindness is in part devotion towards the welfare of oneself or to others, or developing or fostering or nurturing feelings of welfare, of goodwill, of caring, of loving kindness or love. And just repeating myself again, but it's really something that happens in the body. And if you realize that those feelings arise out of the body, then you may be more likely to surrender or relax or settle into your body, because that's how it's going to happen. And if it remains just intellectual exercise, I don't really think it becomes, it can't really become fully developed. You can't be tender without being tender physically. You can't be just tender-minded. So how was that? To do that session. Yes.
I think I crossed myself up, because in the first part of the exercise, I began thinking of my schoolmates who were killed in the Second World War, and I can remember it. One was killed on the beaches of Tarawa. The other one was killed over Germany, the 17 bomb. But I did the exercise.
But the result is one of great sadness. How could help that?
You're not supposed to help it. I think that, you know, last week one of the things I said is that when you do loving kindness, it's the metaphor is kind of like you're softening some of the crusts on the heart. And what's deeper in there will have a chance to show itself. And often what we carry in our hearts is not necessarily, you know, not just loving kindness, but there's many things there. And there can be great sadness and great grief. There can be great anger and rage that resides in our heart. And that the part of doing loving kindness sometimes is softening enough to allow those feelings to come. So, and the capacity to feel sad or the capacity to feel compassion or I think is a beautiful capacity. And even though it's painful, it's part of what it means to be a human being. So, I mean, just for you to say that to me, you know, we're all sounding pretty open, you know, our hearts are kind of soft from doing this loving kindness. I mean, I feel the sadness, I feel the pain, and in a sense, both loving kindness and compassion can grow out of that. You don't have to turn away from it. So you didn't do it wrong. Yes?
Question. There are different words for loving kindness and compassion. Are they distinct things?
Yes. They're distinct. They're closely related, I suppose. But loving kindness is wishing for the welfare of others, the happiness of others, whereas compassion is feeling the pain or the suffering of someone and wanting to alleviate the suffering. And you can have loving kindness on top of compassion. You not only want to alleviate the suffering, but you want them to actually be happy. But compassion is mostly a desire to alleviate that suffering, to take care of things or right things for that. And the understanding one understanding in Theravada and Buddhism is that the other kind of wholesome social emotions that get cultivated or get reinforced through Buddhist practice arise out of loving kindness. So sympathetic joy, feeling joy in someone else's joy, and feeling compassion for someone else's suffering, that arises naturally out of a heart or a felt sense of loving kindness. Because loving kindness, in a sense, is kind of an open tenderness of heart, the kind of the foundational tenderness of caring. And if you have a tenderness and caring, and that tender, caring heart confronts joy, it's going to resonate with, you know, joyfully. And if it meets or encounters suffering, that tender heart is going to feel naturally compassion. Is that yes? You're welcome. Thank you. I was really touched, actually, how many of you come. There'd be more people. I thought usually, I did for sure. There'd be fewer people today than last time. And it made me feel kind of filled with kind of warm feelings of loving kindness, just naturally, just seeing so many people are interested in such a thing and willing to go along. And so thank you all. For someone else. Yes?
Are there tapes of this thing?
Of what thing?
Are there tapes of this?
Yeah, you mean the guided meditation?
Like on this
left. Yes, I talked to Allison. And it's being taped and something happens to them. And also the Dharma Seed Tape Library, which is this place in Massachusetts, sells kind of just these longish kind of guided loving kindness meditations from the different teachers. And sometimes it's nice to hear it from different teachers because different voices, different whatever, kind of work better for different people. And so, did anybody find that it was easier, more difficult to do it towards yourself the second time in the end than it was the first time at the beginning? Than last week? Uh-huh. Do you have any sense why, or
maybe just I practiced a little bit, and maybe because it's easier to think of somebody or somebody else too.
What about from the... We started off by doing it towards ourselves today, and then we did it, it came back to ourselves at the end. Was there a difference in ease between the beginning of today and the end?
At the end, it was easier. Because I was more focused.
Yeah, also, yeah. Someone else? Yes?
I noticed that my awareness of just the area of my heart and maybe the breath as being attached with my heart going in and out, I became more and more aware of that as the meditation progressed. So by the end, I really felt like I was in my own heart, and I wasn't like looking at my own heart.
Uh-huh.
I felt like it was a part of me.
So it was easier to do loving kindness than it would be into it. Good.
I think for me, I always had this resistance to do it for myself, and I was really reflecting on why I have this resistance. And I somehow I got into a place where there was a voice inside saying that I wasn't a good person. And then I started writing all these things down, and somehow that came, it felt like from my father when I was a little girl. And then I really looked at it, and it's not true, you know. So just really seeing what I was really saying way down deep. And I do that when I have these deep knots in my body.
Uh-huh.
It's like I say to myself, this voice says, well, you deserve that because you know you're not a really good person. And I don't know. Right now I'm thinking that I'm not all that bad, you know, any more than all the rest of people. You know, I think on that greed, hate, and delusion, my thing is, I tend to have a lot of aversion and judgment, and I think that that's the thing that's really holding me up.
So one way to do loving kindness practice is to get a sense of what that is like, feel it, feel the knots, feel the voices, whatever. And then do loving kindness towards them.
To the knots?
Yeah. And to may you be happy, may you be well. And to, when you hear that inner judging voice saying, you know, you're terrible, may that judger be happy, may the judger be... So rather than kind of dismissing it or kind of trying to, you know,
okay,
judge it again, just do loving kindness towards it.
Okay.
And all things... there's a wonderful quote that I should probably try to memorize by Rilke, where he says that all things that are, you know, all the demons within us are really these precious princesses that are whatever that are asking to be loved. That's good enough. Yeah.
Talking of demons, I've had a really terrible day, and I can't remember feeling such anger and even hatred, wishing bad things to happen to a person.
Yeah.
And I just had such difficulty really allowing myself to have those feelings.
Yeah.
And behind that, it's like we've been studying Salzburg's book, you know. And I feel like up until today, I have never had such loving kindness for myself. And I'm wondering if the two are balanced. I can't believe the pain I was in over having these feelings. And I couldn't get rid of them. I mean, I did all my toolbox of techniques that I know, you know, breath work and everything. And like I couldn't let it go, and I wanted to let it go, and I couldn't let it go.
So what I most feel it's saying in response, which is, it's very unteacherly, because it is not to say anything.
It's what?
The unteacherly thing for me to say is not to say anything about it. Mm. So that's what your experience was like today. This way it is. So you were really furious, and then you felt all this loving kindness. It's really great. That's all you need to know. You don't necessarily have to understand why. I could come up with some nice ideas, but I think it's maybe more profound just to let it. This is who you are right now, and that's okay. You don't have to. It doesn't become better by understanding it. Just, oh, that's who I am today. And that's precious. What was it like to feel your inner, your vitality or your aliveness? Is that something you could connect to? And those of you who could connect to that, was that something that was that felt precious? And connecting to that, was it easier to have a loving kindness then? To feel that you're precious and not so terrible? Did anybody have difficulty with this? Yes, Genevieve. And loving kindness is a very powerful practice, and you don't necessarily feel more loving by from doing it. It's kind of just softening that happens, and sometimes there's a tremendous resistance, and all these other things start happening, and grief and sadness, but you have your choice what to do. You could always switch and go back to mindfulness practice. You could open your eyes, you can get up and leave, because it's important that you feel that you have some choice in the matter, that you don't have to sit and just come sit and take whatever comes. So you can say, now it feels right to me to feel my sadness, and so I'll open to it, and maybe this class here, that's the opportunity. For you is not to develop loving kindness, but to give yourself half a chance to feel the deep wellsprings of sadness, and out of that will come maybe a new, renewed ability to feel loving kindness. So I certainly would expect that there are people who have exactly your experience. And again, you know, if you feel like you're doing it wrong, you're not. It's working for you.
Maybe other people had problems with sleepiness. This is a bad time of day for me.
Yeah.
And can you say again what to do about that? I was wide awake when I got here.
Well, this is the problem, you know. I'm wondering sometimes whether I shouldn't, you know, develop more of a drill sergeant voice. Yeah. You over there. Open that heart. you've heard some instructions around that. You might do loving kindness practice with your eyes open if you're really sleepy. Do it with your eyes open. Loving kindness meditation with your eyes open. And it might be more difficult, probably much more difficult to fall asleep. What your visual field is what's happening there is not that, doesn't matter so much whether your eyes are open or closed. Sometimes people sit, you know, in front of a window and get some light coming in, or sit in such a place where it's a little bit simple in front of you, maybe. But keep your eyes open if that helps. And it could just be this time of day for a lot of people is difficult. And there's a lot of end of the day, people are sleepy and worn down and all kinds of things. And so this is the time we're doing it, so you have to allow that to be, you know, as part of what's happening. And to kind of accept it. I thought it was always very interesting when I used to sit every afternoon. I would sit at 5:30 or so, 5:45 to 6:30. I'd come back from work and I'd go sit, and I'd sit for 40 minutes. And the first 20 minutes always was this tremendous unwinding of my fatigue. And sometimes I'd be nodding off, I'd feel all this tension, all this energy going through my body, all this stuff, you know, I accumulated through the day. And then after 20 minutes of kind of just resting and settling and relaxing and falling asleep briefly and whatever, I'd settled enough, and then all of a sudden wakefulness would arise. And I just knew that was the pattern. I needed to give myself a chance to rest. And for me, the rest I got in 20 minutes of sitting was so much more thorough than it would have been if I hadn't a nap. So I didn't beat myself up because I was sleepy the first 20 minutes. I realized that was a condition that had to unfold. So you could sit with your eyes open. You could just allow it. You can do loving kindness to your sleepiness. You can... And then the other thing to be said, you know, is that loving kindness can be very powerful, and there can be like a lot of resistance to what's there. And sometimes sleepiness is a defense. It's another way of having resistance. And but I think for most people, this time of day, it's just, you know, just that's the time of day, and your blood sugar or whatever. Yeah, Bonnie.
Can you say a little bit more about what you said about that it resides in your body? Loving kindness comes out of your body, and so what you said was maybe if you realize that or think of that, that you'll sort of relax and sink in.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more specifically or say anything else about what you might do and paying attention, you know, particular ways to pay attention to your body or anything like that in doing well doing?
Well, one thing you can do, which is interesting, is if there are times, whether it's through loving-kindness practice or whether it's in daily life, if you're in a situation where you feel a lot of love or loving-kindness or strong friendliness or whatever, take a few minutes to do mindfulness practice and feel where the felt sense in the body is for that emotion. Because every emotion will have a felt sense in the body. And what you'll find probably at some point, it might not be obvious for a while, but you'll find that the felt sense of it is probably somewhere in the torso. And you recognize that, and maybe you recognize it like loving kindness is a kind of a tenderness in the torso. It's kind of like when you say open-hearted, I think it's a good reason we say open-hearted. There's kind of a relaxation, a kind of open feeling. And it's kind of tender and vulnerable often. But if you know that that's a capacity or possibility for you, and it's in your body, then you might be more likely to relate to your body, to be willing to be in your body, take the time to be in your body, and to maybe surrender. I think it's a nice, you almost never use that word, but I think for loving kindness practice, it's maybe a nice word. You surrender into your body, and there's a much more higher chance that you're going to feel your tender heart if you surrender into your body. If you stay up in your thoughts and your ideas and your fantasies, there isn't that connection anymore, and less is going to happen. But other things reside in the body too.
What also might help is if you think of something very pleasant that's a really happy moment or something, and then contrast it with something unpleasant that you're thinking about, and just you can really feel it, what it does to your attention, and just that try to contrast might help too. I never noticed
thoughts affected just the level of physical sensation when I can contrast it. Nice. So, anybody else who it was difficult for?